Good morning and welcome to Good to Grow. I'm Denise Rodriguez.
And I'm John White.
And John, we've had such a productive conversation on mulch that there is, and we haven't even covered it all. So let's pick up where we left off last week. We're talking about different types of mulches, organic versus inorganic, and that the fall and winter is a really great time to apply these and refresh in your garden beds. Talked about landscape fabrics, but let's talk a little bit about some of the materials that are available to homeowners, like our dyed mulches that are come in large sacks. And then we'll talk a little bit about how deep we want to make sure that our mulch layer is, and what's the optimum layer for that. So let's talk a little bit about what's available to most homeowners when they're out shopping in the garden center. And those we see a lot of those are going to be dyed wood chips in all different colors. So let's talk a little bit about what some of those artificial colorings can be an issue in our garden.
Okay. I do like your pun that you started off with when you said we haven't covered it all yet.
Well, thank you. You saw what I did there, right?
Yeah. But yeah, those color mulches and stuff are interesting. I mean, I've seen kind of a blue color, and I haven't quite seen a total yard covered in blue mulch, but I imagine that's, I mean, it's like the blue football fields, you know, with the athletic fake, I mean, the artificial turf. It's really quite eye-opening when you see it. But you do have some options on color with mulches, and there is one that uses shredded tire material that's been dyed a color, and then there's wood mulches that have been dyed. Usually the wood mulches typically need to be recolored per se, if that's what you want to call it, because with our sun, they do fade over time, and with water, you know, sprinkler or anything getting on it, a lot of times they'll fade in color. And so a lot of companies sell a colorant that you can spray on your mulch to color it back up. And whether it's natural color or blue or red or green or whatever, they do sell colorants that you can use, and the wood mulches will break down. The colorants that are used are usually non-toxic, so you don't have to worry about killing the plants off or animals or anything like that getting into it. But organic does break down over time, whereas the shredded tire type mulch is going to be permanent and it'll stay there. So the organic mulches you do need to renew periodically. Might be within a year, might be a couple years or 3 years down the road. And now con shells, they have that nice kind of reddish brown color when they're put down, but they end up fading from color over time, sunlight, water, stuff like that. So again, they do have colorants that you can spray on them to kind of make them, you know, give them that nice brown color they had, or you just add fresh pecan shells over the top of it and kind of renew it that way, rake it in, because they do break down over time, but they are slower since they're so dense and they don't really blow off. They mat down pretty good. And, you know, we have eucalyptus clippings that can be used, and redwood do have more of a reddish color to them, reddish brown. And those have a natural antifungal pest repellent type nature to them. So they're good at keeping some insects away, and they last longer. They're more rot resistant, but you pay more for those materials too. So, you know, there's a trade-off there, and they don't break down as quick because they are rot resistant. So they'll last longer as a mulch. So don't think of a mulch necessarily as a soil amendment, but as a protective layer on top of the soil that's keeping moisture in, keeping weeds down, and that kind of thing. So we do have different options.
I've seen some of those mulches, and sometimes the ones that are not protected, they kind of form like a mat. I think it's called like a fungal mat, which actually inhibits any kind of water from percolating down into the soil profile. And they look kind of strange because it's like the fungal mycelium. It's like all like white and almost cottony. And it just has a strange look when it kind of clumps all of the mulch together, and it's, you know, quite unsightly. It doesn't smell bad or anything, or there's like no other like larger insects that are particularly attracted to it. It just doesn't allow for the water to percolate, and that's the main thing for any kind of mulch, you know.
A lot of times those mulches, it's a I mean, call it kind of a beneficial fungus. It's not harmful to the plant, but it does like that environment. There might have been some spores on some of the organic material that, you know, that created the fungal mat, and then moisture, you know, helps for the fungal mat to grow and get bigger. It's not worth it to try and spray some kind of fungicide on it. So usually you just try and break it up, you know, with a rake, good steel rake, break the mulch up, kind of respread it, so to speak.
Right.
And a lot of times that'll help break it up. But usually it's a combination of excess moisture, you know, and lack of air movement, things like that, that really gets it going.
Absolutely. And I've seen it in really like heavy, dense, shaded areas. Not so much like with like filtered shade. It just seems to have happened in like really dense, like under very dense tree canopy is where I've seen those, a lot of those fungal mats occur. So.
Right. And a lot of that's probably the, again, you know, the moisture level and then the shade, mm-hmm. keeping that area cooler and darker. And it's just more of an ideal fungal area to, you know, mushrooms will grow a lot of times. You know, if you're a mushroom grower, you grow them in the dark and, you know, manure piles and, right. and that can keep moisture and they grow good. So,
exactly.
So I wouldn't necessarily not put an organic mulch in because of that. I'd just deal with if it comes up, break it up a little bit. Maybe the mulch is too thick, kind of thin it out a little bit and see if that doesn't help.
Right, exactly. And that's probably seems to be like the number one question is really how deep do I need to apply the mulch for?
A lot of it is the thickness of the mulch material. Used to be, you know, all the mulches were made of pine bark and used to have these huge chunks that were like 2 inches and 2 or 3 inches in diameter. They were huge. And when you pile those up, there's a lot of openings between the chunks. So weeds would grow up through the chunks and stuff. And then they started making a finer pine bark mulch that doesn't have as many holes in it and forms a little thicker layer. And so usually somewhere around 2 inches is pretty good workable mulch if it's a finer type. You can go up to 4 inches, but you know, like you mentioned, with a lot of moisture and stuff, you could get some fungal mats going there, but you just want to kind of keep, I'd say, a minimum of a 2-inch mulch layer. So if it goes below 2 inches, you probably need to add some mulch back to it.
There you go. That's your number 2 inches, 2-inch depth for your mulch.
Right. And you're trying to save water. Mulch is definitely a good thing to use.
Exactly. So that brings us to our next topic today on our garden chore list for November is what to do with irrigation. Now that we're getting into the cooler time season, if you will. And really, it's about a couple of things. We'll talk a little bit first about what do we do when our Bermuda grass starts to become dormant.
Well, I still like to, irrigate Bermuda grass, even though it's gone dormant, as well as some of your shrubs and trees. Just because they're dormant doesn't mean they're dead.
Yeah.
And Bermuda grass, if you actually go down, look at it close, you'll see green down in those brown, you know, grass. So it's just below the surface. It's still green under there. Right. So be careful about using any kind of herbicides and stuff because you can still damage that Bermuda grass because it's still green underneath. So some moisture once every 3 or 4 weeks is probably good. You want to water it enough that you get the penetration down to the depth of the roots. So you don't want to do a 10-minute watering. You still want to do your 20 or 30-minute watering where you get the moisture down in there. And especially for trees and shrubs, you may even want to water for a longer period to make sure you get that good depth for rooting on trees and shrubs. But I say about every 3 weeks would be good unless you're just in the sandiest of soils. Then you may have to play a little more by ear and you may have to do it every 2 weeks.
Right. Absolutely. And we know that our trees, whether they're evergreen or deciduous trees, do suffer the most due to water stress, even during the winter time as well, because we don't get a lot of irrigation or a lot of natural precipitation in the winter for the most part.
I mean, if you can keep your moisture level pretty good during a freeze, the plants are actually more protected when your plant's been watered versus one that's dry.
Absolutely. And that goes even beyond just trees and shrubs that are planted in the ground. That's also true for containerized plants. as right. well. So, you know, don't forget those containers don't have any insulation, like, you know, our soil acts as a nice little buffer as well. But speaking of containerized plants, though, we still have some time to put out some cool season bedding plants.
Right.
And have a nice decorative walkway or entryway, especially leading up to the holiday season as well. And there's a whole different recipes for putting in container plants and container arrangements together. But I think the one rule that we all can agree on is more is better when it comes to containers. You want to make sure to pack those plants in tight to maximize the color, and it's going to be for a very short amount of time. These are all annuals that we're talking about. We're not a long-term commitment when we talk about these containerized plants. So anything from pansies, violas, snapdragons, real great tall height annual, dianthus, and flowering kale are some of the most popular ones that are out in garden centers right now.
And there are some vegetables, you know, like there's a very colorful.
Are you talking about Swiss chard?
Yeah, Swiss chard, sorry. Yeah. But there's a very colorful Swiss chard. They'll handle the cold and give you some really spectacular color. And yet they can be harvested and you can have some stuff for your salads and use it in cooking. And so you can get a dual purpose out of that.
Right, exactly. Now that's really great information, and you use those edible vegetables for your cooking as well. Speaking of cooking, I did not put in my garlic this year, John. The window has passed for me. I just didn't get enough time to have garlic.
Well, so, November is still a good time to put your cloves in the ground and stuff.
But the window is closing in really fast.
Quick, get outside. Quick, get outside.
Right, exactly. It's always a great time to get outside, especially during the cooler times of the year. It's plenty of sunny and almost warm days ahead of us, folks. So don't get ahead of yourself. Your final tip for November is do not get ahead of yourself to prune any type of woody trees and shrubs. Just let them be.
Yeah, you got lots of time, yeah.
Lots of time for that, and not a lot of time for garlic, so.
look at it in the spring. Right. Early spring, do some pruning.
Exactly. And one really great thing that we're doing, even during the cooler or colder winter months, is to continue to have our help desk available for you all. And the great thing about that is it's going to be all online at txmg.org/lpas. So once you hit that homepage, you're going to see a little column in the bottom of the screen or off to the side. It says gardening questions, chat with us. That's going to be your link to be able to pop that up. You're going to get a great welcome message from Master Gardeners. You're going to be able to ask questions, upload photos, and communicate with Master Gardeners, and they'll be with us for the entire winter season. So take advantage of that. We'll talk more about that on a future show. But for now, we're all out of time. We want to thank you for listening today. I'm Denise Rodriguez.
I'm John White.
And remember, a gardener shadow is the best way to keep your garden good to grow.
Local support for the production of Good to Grow on KTEP comes from the estate of Maxie Templeton.